Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome into the Believe in Steelers show. Very excited to have tonight's guest on, and we'll get to that in just a second, but let's pay the bills first. Today's episode of Believe in Steelers is brought to you by betonline.ag. The NFL offseason's here. Free agency is right around the corner. If you want to place a bet on where players will wind up, there's NBA, there's NHL, college basketball. We're into March. BetOnline.ag is the place to do it. Use our promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Today's episode of Believe in Steelers is also brought to you by Cut.com. They're the peer-to-peer sports betting app, and sports betting becoming legal in more and more states throughout the country. So very excited to have Cut.com as a presenting sponsor of the Believe in Steelers show. And we've got a promo code for you as well on your screen right now. That is Believe Steelers. That's B-L-E-A-V Steelers. All one word. We'll put a referral link in the show notes as well. Very excited to have Cut.com. Welcome into Believe in Steelers. I'm Mark Bergen. Joined tonight by a very special guest, Alex Kozura from Steelers Depot, has a huge following there. Alex, always love your work. Good to see you. Good to hear your voice. How are you tonight?
Thank you, Mark. I'm doing well.
Good to have you here. And I feel like we've talked ad nauseum about this on social media, on other podcasts, but the Steelers quarterback room. Kenny Pickett's the only quarterback under contract. And Alex, I want to pull in a tweet that you posted earlier this week. We're recording this on Wednesday, March the 6th, talking about the Steelers quarterback room. And you said, I know it's been speculated in every which way, but I'm expecting the Steelers quarterback room in 2024 to be Kenny Pickett plus a veteran, whether it's Rudolph, Ryan Tannehill, or an equivalent player battling it out for the quarterback position in Latrobe. Pickett, the favorite to win. Alex, why'd you send this tweet? Walk us through this, and we'll talk about who the Steelers QBs will be in the 2024 season.
I was really just trying to crystallize my own thoughts, really, about how I think this thing's going to go, because as I'm sure you're aware and everybody else is aware, just how much speculation there's been about who will be the quarterback and so much national media chatter about go sign Russell Wilson, go trade for Justin Fields, go big and get Kirk Cousins. And what I came to the conclusion of, and there's reporting out there that also helps kind of get me there, but I'm going to believe Pittsburgh when they tell you what their plan is. And what they said the entire offseason is Kenny Pickett's our guy. Yes, there will be competition, but we're going to give him another chance. And I think what it comes down to is their calculation is Matt Canada was the main problem, or at least they're going to find out, was it a Canada problem or was it a Pickett problem? And the only way to do that is to have Pickett play in 2024 under a new OC in Arthur Smith, somebody experienced with a good resume as an OC as he had in Tennessee. And so that's how they're going to approach this year, make or break with Kenny Pickett. Will there be competition? Sure. Veteran, Rudolph, I should say, or a veteran equivalent, but Pickett will be the favorite because the only way to learn more about this guy post-Canada is to actually play the guy. So that's how I think they're going to approach this thing, despite all the rumors and speculation and buzz. I just don't see any other named quarterback, because if you go trade for a Justin Fields, or to me, even go sign a Russell Wilson, they're the starter. There is no competition. They're not going to ride the bench. I just don't see that being Pittsburgh's approach.
Let's keep it with Pickett. I'm with you there to where let's give him the benefit of the doubt with better coaching. And I see the parallels with Arthur Smith in his time in Tennessee when he was the offensive coordinator there, where helped resurrect Ryan Tannehill's career. Helped develop Derrick Henry into King Henry. Now, I'm not saying Najee Harris is Derrick Henry, but it's a nice two-headed monster with Najee and Jaylen Warren. And then George Pickens in the equivalent of A.J. Brown from Tennessee. And a lot of people are going to point to, will say, three straight seasons of 7-10 football in Atlanta. Does that not count for nothing? May I point out that his quarterback was Desmond Ridder in Atlanta? Can I point that out to where Atlanta is looking for a quarterback this offseason? So let's give Pickett the benefit of the doubt. I do want to continue this conversation with the other quarterbacks, but Alex, go ahead and hop in and piggyback off any of my thoughts there.
No, I get the parallels. And listen, half the reason why they fired Canada midseason last year, which they had never done before to fire a coordinator midseason, was because I think they wanted to see Pickett under a new coach, and that was going to be Mike Sullivan as the play caller, not the actual OC tag. That was Eddie Faulkner, but, you know, Sullivan, experienced guy who called plays before, and they got about six quarters into that look before Pickett hurts his ankle against Arizona and does not play a snap the rest of the season. So I think what they had hoped for ideally was you fire Canada midseason, get the stretch run with Pickett and Sullivan. You can really evaluate Pickett that way, and they really were robbed of that opportunity. And then Rudolph plays well. You can't bench him in the middle of your run, playoff push. And so that's how that scenario played out. I mean, I with Arthur Smith, there's pros and cons. I would push back a little bit and say, yes, he had Desmond Ridder as his quarterback, but he's the head coach. He helps build the roster. And so he helped put himself in that position. Not alone, there's GM and ownership and a lot of, you know, players in that scenario. But yeah, point taken that they weren't dealing with a franchise quarterback. But of course, but what I think he made the point really concretely of was the Tannehill comparison, because he was a bust in Miami, first round pick, didn't work out, goes to Tennessee, becomes comeback player of the year in 2019, throws for 55 touchdowns in the 2 years with Tennessee. So they're banking on Smith being able to do at least similar with Kenny Pickett.
Absolutely. And even if you're Kenny Pickett's not his biggest supporter, I mean, the health is one thing. He hasn't stayed healthy in 2 years. No, people point to the six touchdown passes where it wasn't good enough this past season. It just wasn't. And let's move to Mason Rudolph, though, because he was the Steelers' best quarterback this year. Three games at the end of the regular season, the playoff start as well. He's earned himself some money, but the question is for like how much? And I get the logic of like, okay, pay the money to Mason that you were paying to Mitch Trubisky. But if they re-sign Mason, I truly think he deserves every opportunity to start and have a truly open competition. It's just going to matter how much do other teams value Mason Rudolph, because if you have to pay a premium for him, like I look at it almost like if you get closer and closer to a $10 million per season mark, it's like they can go out and get another veteran quarterback to compete with Kenny and just get better contract value. How do you see the Mason Rudolph situation playing out?
It's really interesting. I don't know which way this thing's going to go.
I don't either.
What I think it'll come down to is how sincere does Rudolph believe a competition would exist if he returns to Pittsburgh? Because that's what he wants. He wants a chance to start in Pittsburgh. I think could arguably give him the best place to do that. But is this going to be the 2022 competition where it was Trubisky, Pickett, and Rudolph? We all knew Trubisky was going to start, barring just him falling completely on his face, which did not happen. He started the year, then got benched by week four. So that's what I think it comes down to in Rudolph's mind. Also a little bit about, as you said, the market. And what'll hurt Rudolph this year is how strong the quarterback class is in terms of free agents, Kirk Cousins, Wilson. I assume Fields will play somewhere other than Chicago in 2024. And even other quarterbacks, a bunch of other veterans out there, and Sam Darnold, Tannehill, Drew Locke, Jacoby Brissett, Gardner Minshew, et cetera. And also a really, really good quarterback draft class where you could see probably three in the top three, five in the top 10, you know, maybe six, seven go in the top 50 picks a quarterback, which is going to plug up some opportunity for Rudolph. So, but again, what it comes down to is, does he believe there'll be an actual competition? Because he has been kind of strung along, and football is not fair, but I mean, he's not probably always gotten a fair shake in Pittsburgh. I call him Charlie Brown, and Pittsburgh is Lucy pulling the football away at every opportunity for the guy. And again, sometimes that's football, and you know, it's not always meant to be completely fair, but I can certainly understand his frustration. I don't think he wants to go down that road again.
I love that peanuts analogy. That was well done. You landed the plane there. That was well done, my friend.
But so we'll see. But yeah, the market, I mean, I think he's not going to, I don't see him really having an earnest chance to start somewhere other than Pittsburgh. But also, what is the likelihood is that Kenny Pickett will start week one. I think it'll have to go really, really wrong for Pickett to not start, because as I said, the only way to really truly evaluate this guy is to play him in some regular season action. And so I think that's going to be the course that Pittsburgh takes. Now, if you're Rudolph, you can sit there and say, I'm the backup, I'll get paid well. And one negative on Kenny Pickett people don't talk about is, I'm not blaming the guy for it, but he struggled to stay healthy. He's missed a bunch of time. I think Trubisky played almost a third of the games that, you know, Pickett started after he was benched in 2022. So those chances to play.
And that's something we see across the division as well. The physicality of Joe Burrow missing time, Lamar Jackson in previous seasons missing time, Deshaun Watson missing time, whoever the backup is in Pittsburgh, likely is going to play at some point this upcoming season or future seasons. So that's why it's really important you get this position right. Now, with Rudolph, I am also wary of, yes, he played very well at the end of the season, the best football he's played in the NFL. But what's to say he's not Matt Flynn, right? You remember that back in the day, Matt Flynn had a one-game sample size where he tore it up, got a huge contract, and then he wasn't the guy. That led to the emergence of Russell Wilson, but that's also why there are some Steelers fans that want to bring Mason Rudolph back by any cost. And it's like, no, what's his market value? Because I look at it like when I'm evaluating teams and players, I look at it in quarters. So four-game sample size. He had a nice quarter at the end of the season, but especially with the new system and a new OC, how's that going to translate over into this coming season from Mason Rudolph's standpoint?
Sure, that's entirely fair. I don't think he's Matt Flynn, but I don't think he's the long-term answer for this franchise either. I think he's a solid number two quarterback, and that's going to be his ceiling. They can come off the bench and play a quarter, as you said, not going to play 17 games and be a top 10, top 12 type of quarterback, but he'll run your offense. I mean, he'll run it the way that you want to. He'll play from within the pocket, and those are things that Pittsburgh needs. Is he a great scheme fit overall? I mean, that's a broad conversation to have. He doesn't have quite the mobility that Arthur Smith likes to move the launch point and run bootlegs and kind of move the pocket a little bit, but that's not necessarily a deal breaker. Smith had Matt Ryan in 2021, and you can make things work and adjust and tweak things overall. But yeah, I mean, I think Rudolph is a good number two quarterback, and that's who he is.
Let's talk Fields. I get the durability concerns. I get the turnover concerns. I don't think Chicago has done him any favors. I do think he'll play somewhere other than Chicago in 2024, given that I think it's inevitable that they'll draft Caleb Williams with the first overall pick. But the question I keep asking myself with Fields and the possibility of Pittsburgh is, who are you competing against? Here's why I ask that is, okay, Atlanta does need a quarterback, right? I've seen them linked to J.J. McCarthy. I've seen Atlanta linked to Justin Fields. So potentially Atlanta, I get that. The Raiders, if it hasn't worked for the last two seasons with Luke Getsy, who's now the Raiders OC, it didn't work in Chicago. Why would it work in Vegas when, oh, you've got to go up against Mahomes and Herbert both twice a season? So I don't see that working. You're not going to trade him in the division to Minnesota. I've heard some rumors about Cleveland, but I think that they're going to do everything that they can do to make Deshaun Watson try to work in Cleveland. My point is if you're Pittsburgh and you are interested in Fields, who are you competing against with a trade? And that being said, I would not give up a premium. Like, weeks ago, I saw reports that Chicago wants a first-round pick for Justin Fields. Well, I'll tell you right now, they're not going to get that. And if Chicago is not careful, like, if I'm Ryan Poles, the GM there, even if I can get 90 cents on the dollar from what I initially wanted, if I could get a second-round pick for Fields, I'd call on that trade immediately, because with free agency starting in a week, we may find that there isn't a suitor for Justin Fields. And then you're either stuck with him or you're getting back even worse capital than you expected. That's how I see the Justin Fields market. Am I off base? What say you, Alex Cazora?
No, I think you're right. I don't think anyone knows where this guy's going to go. The reports have been so mixed, but I think the consensus is there's not really a clear path for him to go. The conventional wisdom has been Atlanta. He's a Georgia kid, grew up in the area, played at Georgia before he transferred to Ohio State. But the reporting, if it's to be believed, is that Atlanta wants Kirk Cousins. And I think Cousins will have to be the first quarterback domino to fall before Fields picks up and these other quarterbacks kind of figure out where they're going to land. I really think overall, Mark, that he's going to go to some team we're not talking about right now. I've mentioned the Giants. I'm just speculating wildly on my part, but I mean, they're done with Daniel Jones, and because Fields is still on his rookie contract, they can absorb that deal without a big issue, despite the giant contract that Daniel Jones has. You're right. I don't see the Raiders going to Minnesota on a trade. Would be pretty wild to do. One other factor, though, with Fields to consider, and Adam Schefter had said earlier Wednesday that he thinks this thing will get wrapped up within a week, which all I want him to go is somewhere, just to stop talking about the speculation. Just give me an answer. I'm just tired of talking about it. But one thing that would give me pause if I'm Ryan Poles is we assume the the Bears will take Caleb Williams first overall. And if they deal Fields and write that in pen, it'll be Caleb Williams, correct?
In Chicago?
Yeah, for Chicago, yeah.
I wouldn't see any reason why that would change unless they trade the pick. I mean, unless the haul back is just so great. I mean, like, we're talking about, like, here's how I approach it from Chicago standpoint, right? Like, the haul that you got for the number one pick last year, which led to Bryce Young, that has to be where you start the conversation if you want the first overall pick to draft Caleb Williams.
Right, I agree. But here's my hang-up with that is, Williams did not go through the medical portion at the combine. It was his choice, and I'm not debating that. I'm fine with that. But if I'm Chicago, how do I justify in this current moment trading Justin Fields without having a full medical evaluation on Caleb Williams? That's going to happen. Williams has said he will do his medical with teams that he visits with. He's going to visit with Chicago, I believe, the day after his pro day, which I think is currently set for March 20th. Chicago wanted him in the building like the day after the combine. And I think that was for the medical aspect, because God forbid you trade Fields next Monday and then you get Williams in the building later in March and you find out one of those heart problems that Maurice Hurst was discovered to have, or Trey Smith or somebody like that. And obviously you hope that doesn't happen. And odds are he'll be fine. There's no known medical history I'm aware of with Caleb Williams. But what if that scenario played out? How can you say we are all in on this guy to the point where you trade Fields and you don't have a medical workup on your face of the franchise, your quarterback in Caleb Williams? So will Chicago have to wait and check that box to deal Fields? We'll see. If they get a great offer right now, like you said, you take it because you might not get it later. But if I'm Chicago, that thought keeps me up at night.
Yeah, I don't think the odds are great. I think that's a great point that you made. But if you run across that bridge into where you get a deal for Fields, like for me, it's getting out ahead of the market in a deal with Fields to where you're at least getting back what you deserve for a player of his caliber. I think it's clear that, like, I don't think Fields is Patrick Mahomes, right? I think he's capable of being an NFL starter though. So I would at least want to get out ahead of the market with that. And then, I mean, I don't think the odds are high that Williams has physical problems. I don't blame him for giving the same medical information to all 32 teams in the league, which is why he didn't do that at the combine. I don't fault him for that at all. And if they were to have found something, or it's like, you know, you don't know how these doctors are going to examine you, he's still the consensus number one pick. Like, I'm not willing to bet my mortgage on it, but like, it's pretty certain that Caleb Williams is going to be the number one pick. Like, I would be willing to bet good money on that. If you run into a scenario where you see something where you didn't like the medicals, well, look, this is a quarterback-rich draft. You could trade back. You don't have to let other teams know that either, because that information would then be private.
Sure.
You could trade back and go get Daniels or Drake May or one of these other quarterbacks if you came across that problem. Again, problem I don't think is likely, but I do think it's a good point to bring up if you're Chicago of let's eliminate all potential issues. I think it's a fair point to bring up, Alex. I really do.
Yeah. And again, I'm not faulting Williams. That's his own medical history. He's allowed to handle that how he wants to. I'm not debating if it's a good idea or if I would do that. But I just, that's the whole reason why the combine was created in the first place, was for one centralized location to get a medical workup on these guys. And that is one, because the whole combine was to start checking boxes on Caleb Williams. So we're all in, the whole staff, but they've met him, they've talked to him. We all feel comfortable about this guy. We watch the tape. We know he's a great quarterback. Let's get to know the man and get the medical. You got to know the man. You didn't get to know the medical. So I'm probably overthinking it, but I just think about one element of why this thing may drag out. And again, Kirk Cousins, I think, is that first domino to fall. And until he decides where he's going to go, I think everyone else will be in a holding pattern.
Where do you think Russ winds up?
It's another great question. Again, I don't see it as Pittsburgh, just to take it back to there, because I think they're in on Kenny Pickett. And even if Wilson comes in for the minimum or a super low-level contract, he's not playing to be the backup. He's coming in to start somewhere, or at least be told that. I really don't know where he'll end up. I think evaluations on him will be different. Again, could it be, you know, Washington, the Giants? He may wait. He may take his time and see how things shake out post-draft and see what the best opportunity is from there. But he's probably in no rush to sign, because again, with that offset, there's no concern about him losing out on money in some respect, because the Broncos are on the hook for all that cash. Although I think if you're Wilson, I'm not as convinced he'll play for the minimum that some people think that he will. Because if he wants to play next year and he plays for the minimum this year, teams will say, well, you just played for $1 million in 2024. We'll give you $3 million this time around. You might hurt your long-term value on that. But to answer your question, I really don't know where it'll go other than not Pittsburgh. That's my answer for all these questions. Is Fields, Wilson, I don't know, but not Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I see. I feel the same way about Kirk Cousins. I think Tannehill is like, for me, it's like you try to re-sign Mason Rudolph. If that doesn't happen, Tannehill would probably be my backup given the connection with Tennessee and Arthur Smith. And then you kind of let the dominoes fall from there of, okay, maybe you see if those two things fall through, are there other veterans out there that you like? What does the trade market look like then if you're looking to get Justin Fields? So those would probably be like a 1A, 1B in terms of how I think the Steelers will approach this. Time will tell, though, here in about a week, which I can't wait. A week from today, the time of this recording, Alex.
Well, I think you're right. I think the Steelers checklist is Rudolph first, if not him, then a veteran equivalent. Tannehill makes sense given the Smith connections. You can mention a bunch of veteran names that I mentioned a couple minutes ago, Sam Darnold, Gardner Minshew, although I think he's a little more of an RPO system guy. That's not really Smith's system overall. Drew Lock, you know, first round pick, didn't work out, got traded to Seattle, came off the bench, had a good game against the Eagles last year, something like that. But actual competition, not somebody that would come in and be your day one starter.
All right. Coming out of the combine last weekend, Alex, what do you think was the biggest news pertaining to how it impacts the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, I don't think it really changed my opinion, but solidified it is that the strengths of this 2024 draft class and the Steelers team needs are very much aligned. This draft is very strong.
I love it.
At center, at corner, at offensive tackle. It's a good receiver group. It's not great at safety. That's one area that Pittsburgh will have to upgrade, but the free agent class is really strong at safety right now. So in terms of the big obvious things Pittsburgh needs to improve upon, the center or the including center, I should say, the combine offers those things, or the draft, I should say, offers those things.
I was not there to see the big uglies work out up front, or some people might call them the big sexies on Sunday with the offensive linemen. But right now, if I had to guess with the 20th overall pick, I think Pittsburgh goes after Jackson Powers Johnson. That's where I think they would do to address the void that you have at the center position. I saw some news today, though, that Mitch Morse is going to get released from the Buffalo Bills, so he'll be a free agent. I think that's a possibility, but given where the Steelers are with the cap right now, I think some of their more major needs are going to get addressed through the draft. But I can't wait, honestly. It's the combine. I'm spot on with you there because I was there Friday and Saturday. So on Saturday, I got to see quarterbacks, running backs, and receivers work out. And then Friday was the DBs. And you have a lot of speed at the defensive back position. And that's something where it's like, okay, on the defensive side of the ball, Patrick Peterson entering the final year of his deal, heard he could still be a cap casualty. And at the receiver position too, Allen Robinson III, he won't be back on that team option right now with how the contract stands right now. Know that there are reports that potentially they could try to bring him back on a cheaper contract. So we'll see how all that plays out, but there were so many talented players, a lot of speed in this draft too, but at the positions where it's deep, I mean, offensive tackle, I think this is a quarterback rich class, which is also something to keep in mind because I approach it from the standpoint too, is you bring in a veteran to compete with Pickett, but you might have a day two or day three guy that who could be developmental for the Steelers because they're going to have three quarterbacks on the roster. So I think free agency will be how they address one. I think the draft potentially is how they address the third quarterback position. I don't expect that player to compete for a starting quarterback position, but that's kind of how I foresee this.
I think you're right. What I would anticipate right now is for that third spot, they have a 6 and a 7, and I think they use a quarterback on one of those with one of those two picks. And I say that in part because of the way that Pittsburgh handles undrafted free agents. This is very nerdy and nitty gritty and certainly like the least of Pittsburgh's concerns right now, but I like talking about this kind of stuff is what the NFL says is you get a certain number, certain amount of signing bonus you can give out to your undrafted free agents. If there's a cap to it, and that cap can fill up pretty quickly for the top undrafted free agents, especially quarterbacks, because they're usually the highest paid guys. And so what teams do to circumvent that is they will give a signing bonus, but also they'll have a partial guarantee of your base salary. So let's say we'll give you a $50,000 signing bonus and we'll have a $100,000 guarantee in your base salary to work around that cap that they have. Pittsburgh does not do that. They only give out signing bonuses and not even to the cap, not even close. It's like they'll spend $50,000, $70,000 on an entire class of undrafted free agents. You will not get a top-tier undrafted free agent quarterback that way. You have to give them some guaranteed money. And so what Pittsburgh kind of has done, I think, in the past, in 22, they took Chris Oladokun in the seventh round to secure him because they weren't going to compete and get him as an undrafted free agent. So long story short is I could see them taking that route again, draft somebody round six, round seven, probably round seven, to make sure that they have him as opposed to trying to compete for him undrafted because they're going to lose out because they just don't change. They have not changed under even Omar Khan. They have not changed that model of how they allocate undrafted free agent money.
Definitely. Definitely. Zach Frazier is another guy at the center position I think we need to make mention of. So those would probably be like the top two centers if you want to go with a rookie at that position, because you got to get the center right. This is a position Pittsburgh hasn't gotten right since Marquise Pouncey retired. So the last three seasons, because Kendrick Green sure didn't work. Mason Cole, I thought, was decent in 2022, and there was just too much inconsistency this past season. So you want to get that right. It would help. Whether it's Kenny Pickett or anyone else back there, you have a solid center. I mean, that's it starts, your house starts from the ground up. You got to build that foundation. Now, cornerbacks, let's talk some corners. I liked Nate Wiggins of Clemson. You see the 4.28 40, but I look at it and say only 173 pounds. And you already have the style of corner and Joey Porter Jr. of, hey, he's the guy that we can put on, that you can match up and erase another team's number one receiver. And this is why I actually like, for Pittsburgh's standpoint, and I don't know if he'll be there when the Steelers draft at 20 and then in later rounds, is Toledo's Quinyon Mitchell, because he ran a 4.33. He's got more size, but he has strength as well. 20 reps on the bench press as well. I like what I see on film. Toledo put him in man-to-man coverage, cover zero coverage, or cover three. And they were cool with it. It was like, we can leave him on an island and not worry about it. To me, you get the best of both worlds there. But okay, is he going to be there when Pittsburgh picks, say, at 20 and you need to address the center position? But then in later rounds, a player of that caliber is probably going to be gone by the time Pittsburgh picks. A few other corners, Terrion Arnold out of Alabama, I thought helped himself. Not the best measurables, but I thought he looked very fluid in his on-field drills. And remember, this was a cornerback class. Eight cornerbacks ran a sub 4.440. And you also had two very talented corners in Kool-Aid McKinstry out of Alabama and Cooper DeJean out of Iowa that did not participate due to injuries. So I don't know if you have like the top level talent at the cornerback position, but I do think that there's talent at this position group in this year's class.
Oh, yeah, there's no question. And I'm a big fan of Nate Wiggins. He's one of, I think, the best pure cover corners. Super great athlete. But does he fit exactly what Pittsburgh looks for? Like you said, a buck 73, the lightest corner there. That was a concern. But to me, the other concern was the arm length, 30 and a half inch arms. And Pittsburgh was building a type of cornerback last year with Joey Porter Jr., Corey Trice, big, long, physical type of dudes. Does Wiggins fit that? Not quite. Mitchell had a great Senior Bowl week. And that is, mm-hmm. I think the Senior Bowl is really for those guys that weren't Power Five types. I know Toledo's group of five, they're not Division Two. They play some of the big boys. But when you can be on that level consistently with your Power Five peers and you're facing Roman Wilson the entire week and you're locking him down and having some really good reps, you kind of alleviate the concern that some scouts might have of, you know, can you play up against the real, you know, top of the top prospects? And that was a big week for him. And then he crushed the combine as well. Historically for Pittsburgh, for what it's worth, and there is a new GM, but the last time they took a non-Power 5 player in the first round was Ben in 2004. They have drafted exclusively, you know, Power 5 since then because they think that the evaluation's a bit cleaner from those guys that played against the top competition routinely. So not saying it can't happen, and I think Mitchell, a good chance he won't be there either. But to play devil's advocate to even that own point, because it's such a quarterback-heavy class, someone's going to have to fall. They can't all go top 15 if you got five quarterbacks going in the top 10, for example. So that will push down the other talent in this class. Center's interesting. I think centers tend to fall more than people think. I think Zach Frazier could be there in round two. That'd be such a great selection, great value pick there. And Pittsburgh certainly needs that center and somebody that's day one ready. The issue with Kendrick Green, I put that issue on Pittsburgh more than Green himself. They completely misevaluated Kendrick Green. They needed a day one center, and Green was an underclassman who played guard mostly at Illinois, and that just was doomed at the beginning. He was a raw prospect. Frazier is not. Paris Johnson's not. And so that makes a lot of sense at center.
All right, let's go to some of the receivers. And the reason I mentioned this is I think Allen Robinson, if he's not gone, again, he's not going to make $10-plus million with what he's currently projected to make on that team option. And so you got George Pickens back, Deontay Johnson entering the final year of his deal. And it's like at the receiver position, what kind of car do you want? Because, like, okay, we know Marvin Harrison Jr. will be off the board. Malik Nabers did not participate in any on-field drills. Romo Dunze, I think, did himself a lot of favors because you have the size and speed with him. But there were so many other good ones. Mitchell out of Texas, I thought, showcased himself. Thomas out of LSU, Nabers' teammate, 17 touchdowns. He looked extremely fluid, a 4.3 in the 40 as well. Tez Walker out of North Carolina. I know everyone's going to be mesmerized, and it was an awesome moment with Xavier Worthy breaking the 40-yard dash record. Little undersized there too. He's going to have to go to a scheme that knows how to utilize his speed. I'm thinking like the Andy Reid, Mike McDaniel, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay type of offenses. But another position group where I think Pittsburgh's going to draft another receiver for the simple fact of who's your receiver three. And then when Deontay Johnson is likely going to be in a different uniform come 2025, the reason I say that is you likely keep George Pickens around and give him a long-term deal versus the money that you would need to sign Deontay Johnson, unless he wants to take a very team-friendly deal. The money that he likely seeks will probably be elsewhere outside of Pittsburgh. That's just my two cents worth.
No, I think you're right. I think that's an accurate evaluation, Mark. And at the least, Pittsburgh needs depth because they have two receivers on the outside, established guys, and that's it. I mean, Robinson may stick, and I'm getting the sense that he will, considering he's still a Steeler. If they wanted to cut him and they didn't have any opportunity to rework that contract, they would have dumped him a little while back. So I think they're going to try to do something with him, but he's a possession receiver in the last year of his career. Calvin Austin, I'm not as big on Austin as probably some other Steeler fans are. So you really have two guys. And if somebody goes down, you lose Deontay last year, it's really just George Pickens. Your offense is struggling because of that. And if you're going all in on Kenny Pickett this year, you better give him weapons and opportunity. And you don't want to have any excuse about somebody got hurt or there weren't the right weapons to throw to. And so that's a consideration. What I look at, Mark, for the combine, I know that they meet with a bunch of people throughout this entire process, but I look at just how many at each position group are they meeting with formally? And we don't know all 45, but we know about 30 of them. And they met, we know, with at least six receivers formerly at the combine, and they're all like top 50 dudes. They met with even a Dunzier, who's going to be a top 10 pick, which really was interesting. They met with A.D. Mitchell from Texas. They met with Troy Franklin from Oregon. They met with, I think, Keon Coleman from Florida State. So they met with a lot of these guys, not just mid-round, late-round picks. And generally, when they're doing that and signaling that kind of interest, in past years, you could draw a line between when they interview with a bunch of guys that are high round picks to what they draft early on. So Arthur Smith's system is typically more tight end, fullback, less three receivers set heavy. But to me, that really raised an antenna for me when they're interviewing all of these top talent wide receivers. And that could be because, again, depth considerations. It's a really good class overall. And then, as you said, Deontay Johnson entering the final year of his contract.
Coleman, I want to talk about a go up and get it guy, basketball player. Good size, and I think some people are going to get caught up in the 4.6 140. He's like a Mike Evans style receiver. I'm not saying he's Mike Evans, but again, a jump ball guy, circus catch guy. When he ran the receiver gauntlet drill where you have to run the full length of the field, and he's going at almost 20 miles per hour, almost as fast as the rest of the peers, I think some people are going to get caught up in the 4.6 140 and say, Mark, that's not fast enough. There are edge rushers who can run faster. With the ball in his hands and his ability to go on a straight line with the football in his hands, that was not an issue at all. I know some people might get mesmerized with the 40 time. This is something where there's a reason why the NFL Combine is the underwear Olympics, and I'll leave it at that.
No, it's a great point, and I think the NFL Combine had made the point as well. The fastest receiver through the gauntlet last year was Puka Nacua, who went to the Rams and had an amazing season. He ran in the 4.5s, and no one cares about his 40 time anymore. He's a fantastic player. So I got to do some more tape on Coleman. There are some concerns about your separation, because you have seen a lot of those bigger guys that can't separate not work in the NFL. But I don't know if Coleman is necessarily one of those just pure jump ball power forward types. There's probably some more wiggle and some more athleticism with him than some other types that have come out in years past, like N'Keal Harry, Laquan Treadwell, guys like that. But yeah, my overall point, Mark, is, I mean, they're going to draft a receiver. The last time they went back-to-back years without drafting a wide receiver was 2003 and 2004. It's not going to happen again, considering the needs and the depth chart at the position. But I think one could be drafted high just based on the current tea leaves of what I'm reading based on their combine actions.
And I think that they'll get someone in the second round a lot, like when it was they got George Pickens. It's like, how did this guy fall to the second round? I think that highly of this receiver class. We were mentioning about fast times. The three kids from Texas, Worthy, Mitchell are the two receivers, and then Robinson, the running back. Can you imagine the Longhorns practices where it's like line up for a sprint drill? And you don't know which of the three is going to win the race because all three were flying in Indianapolis. And I'll tell you what, if football doesn't work for them, they could go find a fourth for a track and field team and compete with just about anybody.
Yeah, I think Worthy was a track guy in high school, had like a 10.5, I think whatever that event was, 100 meter or something. And yeah, just some of these offenses with these school guys are freaky. Texas, LSU with Daniels, Neighbors, and Thomas. Like, how did they not just go undefeated? Just a ridiculous group of guys there. And Thomas, I've been doing some homework on him. I mean, he's a little bit raw, but he's a playmaker. What, 6 of his 17 touchdowns this year, 40-plus yards, most of them from 20-plus yards. LSU offered him a scholarship before he ever played high school football. Before he played a down to high school football, he went to a camp. LSU was there. They offered him a scholarship as a sophomore. He didn't play his freshman year because he's playing basketball. So a really good athlete. He's got good hips. He can separate. He's got to work on his footwork, but that's a guy with just tons of upside.
I did not know that. That's good knowledge. That is good knowledge right there, my friend. That's remarkable. He looked very fluid from what I saw. Like, you could just see, it's like, how do they look? How do they comport themselves? He did a really good job getting in and out of breaks. I thought Tez Walker too. And part of it is like, you see some of the competition, like, you know what it is in the SEC, the ACC. It's like, oh, okay, you know, I was at the game when he scored 3 touchdowns against the Miami Hurricanes. And it's like, well, is Miami down this year? How does that hold up? And then it's like, you see him at the combine and he's running a 4.3 40, and it's like, well, he made himself some money today. He did a good job. But given the depth, I mean, the top three alone between Marvin Harrison Jr., Odunze, and then Neighbors, it's just like, those are your top three. You're still going to get really, really talented players in rounds 2 and 3 at the receiver position. So how that impacts Pittsburgh, I can't wait to see, because that's one position group that traditionally Pittsburgh does a very good job of drafting and developing at the wide receiver position.
They do, especially on day 2, as you mentioned earlier. That's kind of their sweet spot. Is they've only taken 2 receivers in the first round this century, and Burrus in 2000 and Holmes in 2006. One other name just to mention briefly in this loaded group of receivers is Ladd McConkey from Georgia. Talk about just route runners, guys who can get open. My favorite receiver is an open one, and nobody gets open like Ladd McConkey. I mean, he just is a really smooth, technical, nuanced route runner. He's good after the catch. He tested well. Some people thought he was going to run in the 4.5s. He ran low 4.4. I think he actually ran 4.39, I believe, is what the official time was. So no issue there. Will he be a number one where your offense will run through him? Probably not, and that'll hurt him a little bit in this class overall. But just a really skilled route runner. I compared it to Jahan Dotson. So that's a guy I'm just a big fan of. High character as well. I think Pittsburgh will like him. Will they draft him? You know, we'll see. But a really good player.
McCaffrey as well, the younger brother of Christian McCaffrey. And then Ricky Pearsall out of Florida, I thought, had a really good day too at the receiver position. It's like, and I get all these guys can't hit. But my point, I think the point I want to make, Alex, is this, is like, there's going to be a day 2 guy who's better than one of the day 1 guys, better than one of the first rounders. I'm telling you that will happen right now. I don't know who exactly that will be, But I promise you that that will happen, where it got a lot like Puka Nacua a year ago, where it's like, how the heck did he go in the fifth round?
Yeah, or Pickens, second round guy that fell because of the injury and you know, didn't play a ton his last year at Georgia, but obviously tremendous talent there. So yeah, the tough part is finding out that who. If we knew the who, or we wouldn't be doing this right now. We'd be making a lot of money somewhere in the NFL building. But yeah, it's a stacked receiver class, Mark. And so if I'm Pittsburgh, you know, don't need to go sign somebody in for agency. Just go draft somebody, get them on a rookie contract, and get a really, really talented prospect.
I want to talk a little bit about the linebackers, and I'll tell you about Peyton Wilson out of NC State. I live in Raleigh, and I was at the game against Notre Dame. So Peyton Wilson runs a 4.43 40, fastest among all the linebackers on Thursday. And I wasn't surprised about the 40 time at all, because NC State played Notre Dame this past fall. It was a game I was also at, and he's chasing down Notre Dame ball carriers all over the field. And I talked with a scout this weekend, and he told me, he goes, Mark, those players that he chased down on Notre Dame were 4.3, 4.4, 40 guys. And after the game, the following Monday, NC State head coach Dave Dorn told reporters that Peyton Wilson was clocked at running 23 plus miles per hour. Wow. During that game. It's the fastest of any player in NC State history on the field. Doesn't matter the position either. So when he ran that, I was not surprised, because you go back and pop on the tape from September, he's all over the field. And other than age concerns, where 24 years old upon entering the league, I think he made himself some money last week at the combine.
There's no question he's probably the most talented off-ball linebacker in this class, Mark. To me, the biggest concern, and why Indy was even more important for him than others and beyond the 40 time, is the medical. He had a bunch of injury concerns early in his career. He had a shoulder, maybe a knee. His first couple seasons didn't play a lot. He's been healthy the last 2 years. But for him, the issue to me is not the on-field play. He's fantastic. And yeah, I'm betting Bill Cowher back in his NC State days did not run 23 miles per hour. I'll just take a guess at that overall. So really talented player, but the medical is the concern. I think the reward was his medicals are coming back pretty clean overall, which is encouraging. But that'll be the main issue the teams will be looking at.
Another player that I want to make mention of is Texas A&M's is Edgerrin Cooper. And I know that the Steelers met with him in Indianapolis. Do you have any insight there, Alex, about what he brings to the table from the linebacker standpoint?
I didn't write the report on Cooper for Steelers Depot, whatever other writers did, but good athlete overall. I think it's just to kind of pivot a bit more broadly.
Okay.
I have a couple schools of thought. I mean, part of me wants Pittsburgh to draft an off-ball linebacker, because they've had this revolving door of free agents post Ryan Shazier. I mean, it's almost like list of Cleveland Browns failed quarterbacks long. I mean, it's just a super, super long list going back to Mark Barron and John Bostic, Avery Williamson, Joe Schobert. So part of me says you just got to draft the position, because that's what Pittsburgh does. No guarantees. Devin Bush did not work out infamously, but there's an instinct that says go draft somebody, because that's how Pittsburgh finds its talent. But it is so hard, because some of these linebackers are 225 pounds, and it just doesn't work in the AFC North when you're facing Baltimore in December. You need some guys with some size that can hit and play the run. And I give Omar Khan a lot of credit. He built the inside linebacker room, totally revamped it, and they played really well until they all got hurt last year. And they were all free agent additions, and Cole Holcomb, Landon Roberts, and Quan Alexander signed in August. And so it's a pretty good looking free agent class in terms of off-ball linebackers, with Kenneth Murray, Jordan Brooks, Frankie LeVue from Carolina, et cetera. It's a pretty good group. So you may push towards sign a guy as opposed to a draft pick, but Pittsburgh asks so much from that position. They ask those guys to do everything, be three down players, to communicate, blitz, play the run, cover. And it is hard to find that type, because they need a lot out of that position. That's why Shazier was such an amazing player, because he could do it all. And it's so hard to find that kind of guy.
All right, we're going to wrap quickly, but I've got three things I want to get to before we do. When free agency starts next week, what is the number one thing that you're looking at a week from today?
For Pittsburgh, I think safety. I think it's a really good safety group. Some more got added today. Although Jordan Poyer, I don't think he's going to be an option. You got to get younger, got to get faster in the secondary, but it's a poor draft class at safety. There really is no top tier kind of guy. And so I think there's a couple of really good options out there. You probably want more of a box type to complement Minkah Fitzpatrick. You're looking at a Mike Edwards from Kansas City, maybe Julian Blackmon from the Colts, Cameron Crowe from Washington will cost a lot. But if you want to swing big, there's an opportunity there. So I'll be watching safety. Obviously, the quarterback situation will just be big just to kind of wrap that up and end that prolonged offseason discussion. And a corner. I mean, what do they do there? They need outside help, potentially need some inside help. It's a good draft class overall. I really want to see how they handle cornerback.
Definitely. Definitely. And then obviously the center position too. And then I've seen some rumblings about the tackle position, but I think Dan Moore Jr.'s contract is just so favorable to where even if his production's not quite where you want it, it's good contract value considering he's been a starter and stayed healthy for the last several seasons. I cannot wait for free agency because it's like dominoes. And so, especially with the quarterback carousel too, is once you know where the Kirk Cousins of the world are going, everything else kind of falls into place.
Yeah. I mean, a tackle, I could see them running it back with Moore and Broderick Jones. I really want to get Broderick Jones back to left tackle. And I think
I'm with you.
I mean, Khan had said that, but he said eventually. What does eventually mean? I'm not sure how to interpret that. Is that now? Is that based on how things go? If you do move Jones over, then you have a big hole at right tackle. And I'm not going to go sign somebody in for agency. There's really no great option. And it's too expensive. There's a big O-line tax. And it's a great draft class for right tackles, too. J.C. Latham from Alabama, Amarius Mims from Georgia. Mims, really interesting guy.
Super
talented, but 8 career starts, less than 1,000 career snaps. There's a risk involved because a lack of exposure on Amarius Mims. But it's a really good tackle class, so... If Pittsburgh does want to move Jones over, and they should, and hopefully that they do, then right tackle becomes a glaring need.
All right. Two other things really quickly. Najee Harris's 5th-year option. Are the Steelers going to pick it up, and should they?
I'll say yes to both. I'd be very surprised if they did not pick it up. What they've said publicly seems to hint at that. Their offense, even hoping and assuming Kenny Pickett progresses in meaningful ways, is still built around the ground game. And they really value the committee that Harris and Warren have formed to become and to complement each other, to keep each other fresh. And so I think I think Harris has earned that overall. And yeah, I think they should. I mean, it's not a crazy amount of money. It's like $6.6 million, which with the cap, the way that it's gone up is a small, small percentage. Harris has been just his durability alone. I mean, it's remarkable how available he's been for, he's not missed a game in his career, which is just, you just don't see that kind of stuff, and well-rounded type of guy. And you want him, you want Warren. And so I'll say yes to both.
He doesn't fumble either. I'm in the minority. I don't think that they should, but that doesn't take away from his professionalism, the leadership in the locker room. I just think psychologically, I wonder what it would do if they didn't pick up that option and then, I'm in a contract season now. There's a lot of good free agent running backs. And again, this would be for the 2025 season. We'll see, though. The Steelers have between now and May 2nd to decide on Najee's 5th-year deal for 2025. Last thing for you. And this is kind of the elephant in the room. I love Cam Hayward, Walter Payton Man of the Year. He's part of the old Steelers tradition. The standard is the standard. His cap hit is massive. And I know he's owed about $16 million as cap hit, I believe something like $23 million. If I'm Omar Khan in the front office, I'm going to try to rework that as best I can. I love Cam Hayward, but at the age of 35, father time is undefeated for every player. I don't know if he wants to play beyond this season, but if he does, I'd say, hey, what can we do to try to spread that money around a little bit? But that's something that I look for the Steelers to do between now and the start of the season, just with free agency right around the corner. I just think if he were out on the open market right now, he wouldn't get anything near that. Again, love him to death. He's you talk about importance to the locker room, captain of the team, all of that. But it's just the reality of the situation. It happened to Ben at the end of his career too. Something that I have my eye on between now and the start of the 2024 season.
It's a fair point, and Dave Bryant from Steelers Depot has laid out that an extension with no new money is likely to happen, so they'll probably do a 2-year extension to help reduce that cap charge in 2024. Now, that probably won't happen until more of the summertime, because the way that the cap came in higher, about $10 million higher than expected, kind of gives each team, including Pittsburgh, some more flexibility overall. But yeah, they'll extend Hayward. Last year, some people want the guy gone. You're not saying that. I understand that, but just some vocal minority online I mean, he was so hurt last year. When he came back, he was not even close to 100%. I mean, he's out there just kind of giving it his all. He can, even though he still played the run exceptionally well. I ran some numbers. You look at run success rates towards him and away from him. I mean, it's night and day. And he couldn't rush the passer. He couldn't get off the line. His bull rush wasn't effective. But healthy at age 35, still a healthy Cam Hayward is a really effective Cam Hayward. They have to think about future and depth. That's how Hayward got drafted in the first place. When they had Brett Kiesel and Aaron Smith, and they didn't need Hayward right away. He sat his first 2 years, but they were building towards that replacement plan for him. They have to start thinking about the same with Pittsburgh. It is just so hard to find that type, that body type at 6'5", 300 pounds, 33-plus inch arms. Hard to find that guy in the college game. But, yeah, I'm still confident in Hayward, but you're right. I mean, if you look historically, defensive linemen that played past 35 – that's usually where the fall off happens, even for elite guys. Look at a Warren Sapp or John Randall. Around age 35 is where their careers really wrapped up. I'm not saying that will happen to Hayward, but you know, once you get past 35, it's happened. Calais Campbell's still playing some good football, but that's kind of the marker for those elite guys. But again, healthy Cam Hayward, I'm all in for him for 2024.
Can't wait. He is Alex Cazora. Alex, if you have anything that you need to plug with what you're doing over at Steelers Depot, always love reading your stuff. Always love seeing what you're reporting to. You have one of the best Twitter feeds in all of Steelers Nation, but the floor is yours if you have anything that you need to plug. And thank you for your time this evening, my friend.
Yeah, no problem, Mark. I really appreciate it. Love listening to you and Ike. You guys do a great job overall. A really, really good perspective. But yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Alex_Cazora. Follow the site, SteelersDepot.com. Follow at Steelers Depot as well for Dave Bryan. For Friday, I'm not sure, you know, when this will come out. I know we're recording this in advance. You know what day this is going
to
drop?
Plan is to release this on Thursday, just because you know this, the news cycle never stops in the NFL. So I want to get this out as quickly as possible before something we said quickly becomes outdated. Yeah.
100%. But I just say that because for Friday for Steelers Depot, each year I do a mock off season where I use a site called FanSpeak where you can be the GM and run a whole free agency cycle and draft cycle as the Steelers. And I do it every year, put on my little GM hat and run the team. It does not always go well. I make a lot of mistakes. And so it is not a perfect representation of how things should go, but it's one of my favorite things to do each year, that article. It's a long article, but it'll drop on Friday morning.
Check that out over at Steelers Depot. Alex, thank you again for your time tonight. I'll go ahead and wrap for the both of us. For our special guest, Alex Cazora, go give him a follow on social media. My name is Mark Berg, and this has been another edition of the Believe in Steelers show. We'll see you next time. Until then, take care. So long, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.